The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
I have to say, you know, Chase, I came across this article and I thought it just had so much great information that really I think is going to hit home with many of our listeners that really fit in this age range. And whether you fit in this age range or your parents fit in this age range, it's all good information. Some 10,000 people turn 65 every day. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's a lot of things that people know and don't know about what's going on. I mean, it could be, we just don't think about that, you know, about maybe looking forward and thinking about medical cost and retirement. Everybody thinks about retirement, but just how prepared are you really, you know, when that all comes around? There was a great conference that I was reading about, and it was called the Aging in America Conference. It also partnered with What's Next Boomer Business Summit. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And so I tracked down the author of this article, and he writes a lot of great stuff, quite frankly. Richard Eisenberg, he's a senior web editor of the Money and Security and Work and Purpose channels of Next Avenue. .org. It's a fabulous website. I have to tell everybody, you need to go there and check it out. There's so much great information. He is also the author of How to Avoid a Midlife Financial Crisis, and he has been a personal finance editor at Money, Yahoo, Good Housekeeping, and CBS Money Watch. And we are happy to have him as our guest today. Welcome, Richard Eisenberg. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Peggy. Nice to speak to you.
Well, what a great conference that had to be. And this is, I guess, put on by the American Society of Aging. And so many things came out of this conference. And it, apparently it's one of the more well-attended ones that they've had in a while.
Absolutely right. Yeah, it was in Chicago. I just came back from it. I try to go every year. And this year it really had a packed house of people. And The person who ran the conference actually said, you can thank Donald Trump for that. And I think there's some truth to that, because I think there are a lot of people at this conference who are concerned about the effect that the Trump administration might have on aging programs and retirement and things like that. And so I was there to report on it for Next Avenue, to talk about what I heard that related to people's personal finances and working in their 50s and 60s and beyond.
And there was a lot of great panelists there. It had to be a little difficult. What emerged as the number one thing that stuck out in your head?
I guess for me, the number one thing was worries about retirement. You know, will I be able to retire? How can I afford to do it? What do I need to be doing now? What are the things I need to know about? And I heard quite a few interesting speakers talking about that. One woman, Cindy Hounsell, who runs an organization that I really recommend called the Women's Institute for Secure Retirement, or WISER, W-I-S-E-R. She was talking about Medigap and how so many people don't realize how expensive it is, how important it is after you turn 65 to have Medigap insurance, because Medicare doesn't cover everything. Even Medigap won't cover everything, but it will help. But she mentioned that for a 65-year-old woman, Medigap costs between $1,550 and $4,000 a year, wow, depending on where you live and what kind of coverage. And a lot of people, when they get to that age, don't realize that it can be that expensive, and yet it's pretty important for people to have.
And what did you, you know, attending the conference and listening to all these experts on retirement, I mean, what did you hear, you know, kind of the voices of the audience? What was their kind of biggest concern, or their, what they thought was the biggest hurdle for them getting to a comfortable, safe retirement?
I think their biggest concern was, well, two. One was just having enough money and savings to cover their expenses in retirement, and then what about the expenses that they're not expecting, and,
sure,
and particularly things relating to health care and long-term care, those kinds of things. I heard a fair amount of talk about reverse mortgages, which, you know, years ago, most financial advisors did not recommend. They had a pretty bad reputation, reverse mortgages. Things,
sure,
have changed because of the government rules on them. And so now I'm starting to hear financial advisors, and I heard quite a few at this conference, saying, you know what, if you're over 62 and you own a home and you're worried about running out of money, you might want to think about taking out a reverse mortgage. It could be a way to supplement your income. And that's something I hadn't heard in the past.
We actually had an expert from Washington on to talk about reverse mortgages. There's a lot of misconception there and
sure.
confusion, and that might be something that we would want to revisit, that's for sure.
Well, I think, you know, when you really drill down to it, I had a grandparent mm-hmm. who had a reverse mortgage after my grandfather died. You know, at certain times in life, you have to do what you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And if adding that, you know, bridges the cash flow to your final days and takes care of you, you know, I think for some people it's a good move. I think it's a great move. So Richard, so cash flow, savings, medical expenses, any other big takeaways beyond you know, those minor functions, anything around you know, taxes, anything around, you know, passing assets on to another generation? Any of those concerns?
You know, I didn't hear a lot of talk about taxes here, and I think largely that's because there's so much we don't know about what's going to be happening to taxes. We know what President Trump had said during the campaign about sure. what he wanted to do regarding income taxes and these state taxes, and we know that tax reform is on his agenda, but we really don't know what, if anything, is going to come out of that. So I feel like at this point, a lot of advisors are kind of in a holding pattern saying, well, you know, we know what the rules are right now, but we don't know what they're going to be 6 months from now. So I think, you know, ask me again in a year when we have a better sense of what's happened or hasn't happened in that regard. What I did hear was a lot of talk about how to make extra income in retirement and also how to find what a lot of people call finding purpose in later life, which is to say there are a lot of people in their 50s and 60s who have had very good careers and, you know, they did the job or jobs that they sort of went to school for originally, thought they were going to do. Now they're ready to do something that brings them a little bit more meaning. And there was an interesting survey that came out at the conference that found that about 30% of people over 50 are already engaged in what they call purposeful activities for the greater good. Mm-hmm. And a lot more people
sure.
want to do this. And I think that that's going to be something we're going to hear a lot more about and people are going to be looking for.
Now, I think you touch on something that I think is really important, and that is having a purpose. Because if you find times in life when you don't, I think it really affects your mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in retirement it can have a huge impact, especially, you know, your kids are gone. You may not be doing the job. You were an engineer for 30 years. I think having a purpose makes all the difference.
Well, I think people and your dad, everybody used to ask him why he loved to work. And mm-hmm. he said work was his hobby, you mm-hmm. know, doing his job was his hobby. But, you know, everybody thinks I'm going to retire, I'm going to go out and play golf, or I'm going to travel and I'm going to do this. And maybe you're going to do that for the first 6 months or a year or something like that. But then after that.
Sure.
Especially if depending on when you retire, and the lifespans are so much longer, and so you got a lot of time to fill there.
I agree. Yeah. Hey, Richard, you know, looking over some of your articles, I noticed there was a section on common fears across the generations. What was kind of your takeaway from, you know, what people in their 30s all the way to their 70s were kind of concerned about?
You know, I think what they're concerned about is having enough money to last their lives, particularly the fact that we're, as a rule, living longer on average. And so it means that, as you were just saying, Peggy, the retirement is going to last longer for many people than it used to before. So that's the big issue, I think.
Okay, we're going to have to take a break here. When we get back on the other side, I'd like to delve into another topic that came out at the conference, and this is one that affects a lot of folks, and that has to do with caregiving. You're listening to Straight Talk Money, bringing you the wisdom of Wall Street. We've got Peggy Tuck Chase Robertson along with Richard Eisenberg. We'll be right back.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We are talking about aging in America, and I've got Richard Eisenberg. He is the senior web editor and money of the Money and Security and Work and Purpose channels. It's nextavenue.org, a fantastic website with lots of great information. And right before the break, Richard, I was teasing about the fact that I wanted to get into caregiving because that really is – an issue, especially for aging adults and even for younger people that maybe are going to start finding themselves in the position of taking care of their parents or older relatives. And you talk about something called the caregiver creep.
Right, the caregiver creep. And now you might think that that's a name for somebody who's taking care of your parents and is doing things they shouldn't be doing. And there are people like that. Those are caregiver creeps. But this is actually about money. This is a term I heard from a woman named Sandra Timmerman, who's an expert about this. And she said that what people don't realize is that the caregiving expenses sort of quietly just keep creeping up on you. And there was a recent AARP study that found that family caregivers, these are people who are not professionally caregivers, but they need to help their spouses, loved ones, and money to do it sometimes, they're spending on average close to $7,000 a year on out-of-pocket caregiving costs, and that number just keeps going up every year. So it's something you may want to think about having some savings for, because you may need them.
And emotionally, it takes a real toll on the parents as well as, you know, the caregiver themselves. Sometimes the caregiver is really one you need to focus on in order to make sure they're not getting maybe too wrapped up and not getting a break here and there.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. We've written on Next Avenue, and we have a whole channel about caregiving, but we've written articles that have shown, research has found that there's something that's called caregiver stress, and people who are taking care of their parents or spouses, whether it's full-time or part-time, often find that it brings on a lot of emotional and stressful concerns that can be bad for people's health. So sometimes if you're a family caregiver, you need to take a break from that, get somebody to fill in for you. One of the people at the conference I heard speak talked about something called a personal care agreement, which I'd never heard about before.
Yeah.
But it's something that he suggested you get if you have a brother or sister who you're paying to do caregiving for your parent. Have them sign this kind of agreement, which really specifically lays out sort of what they're expected to do and not expected to do, because it's very easy for somebody who's doing caregiving to think they need to do everything, and they don't need to do everything, and you need to be sure they understand that.
Sure. And there are resources available out there. I found when my mother was taking care of my father, and was fortunate that he didn't have some deathly disease or anything, but she was able to get help from the VA, and I've talked with many friends, parents, and stuff like that that maybe are finding themselves in that same position now that don't even realize there are resources out there, and this was free help.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And there's also getting home care, and not necessarily health care, but people as either companions or people to be there to help do cooking or cleaning or just kinds of things that somebody may need. I ran across a company recently I had not heard about before called Envoy, E-N-V-O-Y, and they call themselves sort of a concierge service for older adults, and this is a company that you might hire to run errands for your parent or, you know, take them places they need to go or just get them out of their apartment or house just to get a chance to see the rest of the world. So, I think it's a pretty good idea, and I imagine more people are going to be doing that kind of thing in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the real takeaway here is that, you know, if given enough time and planning, you know, long-term care is really something that aging Americans should look into. You know, as you mentioned, Richard, you know, their pension funds are something of the past.
Right.
And that, you know, Americans are responsible for their financial health in retirement, and, you know, long-term care for the care side is a great way to hedge your bet on that outcome. I mean, I you know, culturally, you know, my mother is from Frankfurt, Germany. Mm-hmm. And when my grandmother got to her final day, she passed away last year. She moved, my mom moved to Florida to take care of both of her parents. And, you know, I know that was a big strain on my mother. I know that the cost of the move, the transplant, you know, selling a house, buying one. I mean, emotionally and financially, that was a big expense. But you know, European families, that's what they do, because her grandmother, you know, lived at home when she was a kid. And, you know, I think as we see America becoming more of a mixing pot, you know, I can see that these issues will continue to, you know, to be front and present.
And Richard, you make a note of that. There was something that came up at the conference about people to be cautious about, like quitting your job and uprooting your life.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, absolutely. Some people find that when they need to do the caregiving for a parent or a spouse, they think, well, gee, maybe the best thing I should do is quit my job and just do this full time because they need my help. And that's, you know, it's a very nice thought and maybe the right thing for some people, but the expert I heard said she recommended being cautious about doing that, because if you quit your job in your 50s or your 60s, even temporarily, to become a caregiver, it can be very hard later on when you want to get back into the workforce, because there are a lot of employers who don't want to even interview, let alone hire people in their 50s,
sure,
60s for jobs, even though they're fully qualified. So not only that, but if you're not working for pay, then you're missing out on the chance to put money into a 401k and get an employer's match. So there are a lot of things you want to think about before you quit your job to do caregiving.
No, I that is completely correct. I mean, it's, you know, the one thing that we drill home in our on the advisory side of our practice, and this is becoming even more apparent on the corporate side, not to mention, you know, the personal financial side, is, you know, time, you know, and those dollars going into savings accounts. You know, even a slight disruption, you know, mathematically makes a huge impact on the final number. Well, Richard, what other kind of takeaways could we give our audience? Maybe for some of our younger listeners in their 30s, any kind of, beyond just cash flow and maintenance, and any kind of unusual things that you noticed that, you know, were not so important to younger generations that more important to older, anything you saw kind of along those lines?
Well, I guess one thing I would say for people in their 30s and 40s and maybe 20s as well is, you know, if you work for an employer that has any kind of an employer savings plan, you really want to contribute to that as much as you can, even if retirement is years and years away. But more,
sure,
and more people are working for places that don't have one, or they're in the gig economy. And if that's, mm-hmm, the case, you really want to set up your own retirement plan, like a SEP IRA. And I worry that people who are self-employed don't think about doing that, and I really hope that they will.
That's a great point, because there's so many great products for self-employed individuals in small businesses. You can put in quite a bit more.
Well, Richard, thank you so much for joining us and sharing what you heard at the conference. Folks, if you'd like more information, great website. Go to nextavenue.org. If you'd like a copy of this article, go to straighttalkmoney.com and send me an email, and I'll be happy to send this and share it. Richard, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Peggy. Thank you, Chase.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.